Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to Romance of the Two Networks. I'm Six Detmar from Scanline Media.
I'm Jennifer Uncle from Scanline Media.
I'm Jackson Tyler from Manual Mapping.
And I'm Em, and we're a third of the way through this goddamn book.
We did it!
But no, we haven't. We've a third have done it. but yeah, we're getting there. And this is the time where this is transforming into a new form where it's not me reading in a summary for literally an hour.
Yep. No, it takes longer sometimes than it would take to read the chapters, so we thought we might change it up.
I have new summaries. I've written up summaries that are much shorter, and I'll read the summary, and then we'll talk about the chapter.
That sounds fine to me. We'll give it a shot.
Does anyone have any? Okay, I do have Rhapsody on a Parrot. Do we want this before or after the chapter? We want it after the chapters, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, then we'll just jump right into chapter 37. Stillwater recommends another noted scholar. Liu Xuanda pays 3 visits to Zhuge Liang. Here's my summary. Shanfu arrives at the capital, presents himself to Cao Cao, who accepts him with compliments. Shanfu then goes to see his mother in jail, who expresses astonishment that he fell for the forgery and hangs herself in embarrassment of her foolish son.
My question. I thought the implication to me here was that he encountered her ghost after she'd already hung herself.
No.
Okay.
No, because he's really embarrassed, and he just presses his face against the floor for, 10 minutes. And in the meantime, she goes and
has I thought he encountered her, and she yelled at him, and then he, like she left, and then he went to investigate and found that she had already hung herself, it had happened, hours ago, and he was encountering her vengeful spirit.
There's a line where it says she went behind a screen, and then someone reported, she's been hung!
To me, that implied a passage of time. They discovered her body as if it had happened some time ago.
Possibly. I read it as she had just gone behind a screen and hung herself out of disgust, but I think both work.
I think it's cooler if a ghost yelled at him, but yes, either way it's fine.
Because my impression was that Shanfu just pressed his head to the floor and just stayed there for an hour because he felt like such an idiot. Cao Cao prepares an artificial lake to train his armies for the invasion of the south.
This motherfucker just building lakes in the middle of we've already underscored that there's famine all over, but he's gonna build a lake so he can run his boats around and make them cool.
Yeah, this is the second time I think that Cao Cao especially has redirected an entire fucking river to fill in an area. The first time it was to flood a city, this time it's so he can have his own little mock training grounds.
So that's how really good at civil works projects that only benefit him.
Yes. What are we going to do with this fucking lake?
We're just going to train. We're going to learn the ways of naval combat. Hell yeah. Meanwhile, Xuanda follows up on Shanfu's tip about Zhuge Liang, who will call by his other name Kong Ming from now on.
Yes. Yeah.
After 2 failed visits to Kong Min's remote home, Lord Guan and Zhang Fei ask if this man is worth the effort, but Xuanda insists and goes for a third visit. What does Xuanda say to convince his brothers read on?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up is what he says.
If either of you two had a single idea once in your empty warlike heads, I wouldn't have to go to this fucking guy on top of this mountain every single time. But you're the muscle. I need some brains.
Yeah.
Zhang Fei is like, why are we doing this? I hate this. What are we doing? And then Xuanda goes in one of these many back and forth goes are you afraid of dying in the cold? He's like, no, obviously not. I just don't even want you to waste your time. And he does basically respond, well, then shut the fuck up. Shut up. We're doing this.
You must not be familiar with the ways of going after a wise person. Sometimes you have to go 5, maybe even 10 times before eventually he's home.
Well, they really want him to just, ask him to come see them, which, yeah, it's rude if you want to hire someone, you know? This is a get for Xuanda if he gets him, not the other way around.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. And I do, we get introduced to a bunch of characters that I guess we'll probably never see again, because every time Xuanda goes to see him, he meets some other, of Kong means like brother or one of his friends.
Yeah, there's like four wise men or whatever, and all the other ones are like, oh no, you really do want Kong Ming. I'm here, but I'm not interested, and you wouldn't want me anyway.
Yeah, everyone's singing.
Yes.
Yeah,
lots of songs.
There's some great songs.
And everyone's song makes Shuanda think that is Kong Ming, and then they go, no, 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 I'm Kong Ming's younger brother, or I'm Kong Ming's father-in-law.
Really convinced one of them was Kong Ming testing him, but it was not.
No, he was just having a sleep.
Yep.
So, backing up for a second, when we had Mother Zhu, Shanfu's mom, hang herself, we get a decent length poem about how cool she was. And there's a line in here that I had to dwell on for a while. Then lest Shanfu shame his forebears, she joined the ranks of martyred mothers.
Yeah.
That's a thing to say.
please listen to The Great Gundam Project every Wednesday. Yeah,
I was
going to
say, fucking
Network.
Ghost Parade is here. Christ. That's not great, is my feeling.
I love that. She's great. She owns, like, the idea of, you know, this is the sick-ass wise man who's got all this, like, military power, and he falls for, like, the first most obvious trick, and his mum is so mad. She's so mad. She's like, you're the person who has to actually do things and have integrity, but you don't have any. You suck. I'm going to die now. It rules.
Yes.
And also, it's so well known that when Stillwater visits Shuanda, and Shuanda's like, oh, he went back because Cao Cao had jailed his mother, and his mother wrote a letter. And Stillwater's like, oh, his mom's super cool. She would never do that.
Yep. Sounds like a Cao Cao trap to me.
Yeah, yeah. So that brings us to Chapter 38. Kong Ming determines the realm's division and charts a course. Sun Quan leads a naval attack and exacts revenge.
He does it though.
So, Shuanda references how emperors of the past were guided by their heroic advisors and how sometimes much effort is needed to secure the services of the great. A third visit finds Kong Ming at home but asleep, so Shuanda patiently waits for him to awaken. Upon waking, Kong Ming protests with humility but is ultimately convinced to give guidance to Shuanda. He advises him to secure Jingzhou, then the Riverlands, and in time, the Northern Heartlands. With this grand plan, his future should be certain.
It's worth pointing out, he wakes up, goes, why didn't you tell me? And then pulls down his, like, wall-sized map of how you can win China.
Oh, he owns. It is, yes, worth pointing
Kong
out.
Kong Ming is one of the best, immediately.
It's great because he's like, oh, I'm just a hit. What would I know of war? What would I know of any of this? And Shuanda's like, I really need your help. He's like, oh, I'm just a simple countryman. He's like, no, I really need your help. He's like, well, if you insist. Thump. So here, these tactical points, just like, really wanted to be convinced.
Yeah. He's also ready to book it as soon as his services are done for. Like, he tells the people keeping care of the house, be like, okay, keep these crops going, I'll be back before you know it.
Yeah, because after more coaxing, Shuanda gets Kong Ming to join him as an advisor.
I'm sure he will be right back.
He will survive. It will be good. In the south, Sun Quan rejects Cao Cao's diplomatic request, setting the two on a path to conflict. He then starts a campaign to conquer Huangshu, who serves under Liu Biao, but faces initial defeats. We're introduced to his younger brother, Sun Yi, who is a drunk who treats his men badly. His underlings conspire to kill him, do so, then shift the blame to one of their co-conspirators and kill that guy. The slain Sun Yi's wife, Lady Zhu, is not deceived, however, and sets in motion a plan for revenge. It succeeds.
Yeah, it does.
The thing with this book is, like, this is absolutely just, like, a sausage fest, but anytime a woman shows up, she's the fucking best.
It almost all the time is, like, using the women in the books as, like, moral checks on the men, right? And, yes, like, to point out, mm-hmm, their failings, which is very cool. Like, you know, obviously, not a, you know, a product of a society that was not in a great place for women at the time. But definitely, like, as a like piece of historical fiction, there's so many cool girls you can read into in ways that is fun to do. Have no interest in calling out an ancient Chinese book. Like, just fucking don't care.
Yeah. There's also, like, the reality of, like, you know, Diao Chan or whatever, like, a lot of the women in here, because they are, like, this is the historical record that exists, they don't, like, they might not exist. A lot, some of them probably don't exist or made up for whole cloth, because the only women in history are the greatest women or the most fictional women.
Yes.
Because that's how history is written, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like that her like, so the conspirators go to her and they're like, oh man, that guy sure did suck for killing your husband. We're here to help you. And she's like, oh great, thank you. And then turns the camera and is like, obviously I knew they were full of shit.
Yeah. I do like that Huang Zhu is called the Bandit of Colored Sails. That's a cool term to call someone.
That is a cool term, for sure.
I have to admit, this South Kingdom, boring. I don't like any of this. I just find it hard to follow and not particularly, like, none of these characters have personalities as far as I can tell, compared to, like, our heroes.
Well, I feel like we get introduced to one who has some personality in a minute here, but overall, I agree. Like, Sun Quan is kind of nothing.
Yeah. He's the son of a more interesting guy who's dead now.
Yeah. So Sun Quan's mother, Lady Wu, passes away. After mourning, Sun Quan restarts his offensive against Huang Zhu. Gan Ning, who is one of Huang Zhu's most gifted officers, becomes disgruntled and defects to Sun Quan. With the added strength of this great warrior, the fighting turns in Sun Quan's favor. Huang Zhu's fate hangs in the balance, Rion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that Gan Ning has a little bell on his uniform, so whenever someone hears that bell go off, they're instantly afraid for their lives.
It's good.
Yeah, I like Gan Ning. I think he needs a little more screen time to develop, but what we have of him, he seems to have a lot. He feels like an interesting character because, like, he is mad that people accuse him of being a bandit, and, like, he did used to be a bandit.
Yes.
And he kind of walks this line that I find really interesting where he's like, listen, I have a kind of honor, but, like, I'm gonna get mine or fuck you. And I appreciate it.
He's very much someone who is committed to his new lifestyle, but if the person he's serving under refuses to let him advance through the ranks and live out his ideal of just keep getting promotions and promotions, then he's gonna turn tail and find someone else who can meet that need.
I want to go back. We kind of skipped over a lot of the Conwing's Wander stuff. I think that this is, like, genuinely some of the best stuff in the book, right? Because we've had this loads of times, and this is a thing that always happens, is, you know, Cao Cao has tried to get, like, a whole bunch of different guys to his side, and then invariably they just don't, and he's like, damn, they're so honorable. And it is really nice. I think this stuff is, like, a good demonstration of how all of these, like, rituals in getting Conwing to Zhuanda's side are inherently false. This is, like, a performance that they've all done before, but, like, it shows why you have to do that. I think that it's very easy to look at a lot of this book and just, you know, the culture it is espousing and it's the values it's espousing and go, why are they, like, pretending to say no three times? Everyone knows it's a performance. But I think this, like, scene, this whole chapter is, like, show the value of that performance and, like, how it's also real. Like, Zhuanda is really going to lengths to make sure he makes a good impression on this person because he genuinely cares. It's, like, the ideal of this, which none of the other characters have really embodied in any of their interactions with their subordinates. So it is really nice to see it, like, laid out. Zhuanda mentions Mencius early on in this chapter, which is one of the ones that I'm reading. It's as far as I've got in, like, reading the, like, philosophy, which I appreciate because, like, I've only read those two, and I want to, like, read more in you know, in how the Confucian thought develops. But Mencius is really good because Confucius, like, very simplified, is often focused on, like, bits of advice for the self. Whereas Mencius definitely develops it, and there's a lot of longer narratives about talking to, like, leaders and going, no, you have to also be not shit. It's not just about all the people being worthy. You have to, like, be worthy of them.
Yeah.
And Yeah. So go ahead. I just concluding, it's nice to see that all, like, I think this chapter is, like, a really succinct version of seeing those ideas narrativized in a cool way, and I really like it.
Yeah.
I also feel like I really buy Kong Ming's hesitance in a way that I haven't for some other people, right? Like, when Xuanda comes to, I don't know, some great warrior and is like, you should come with me, I'll treat you well, and they hem and haw, like, it's like, okay, you're being honorable, I guess, but, like, you want to do this.
Yeah.
But Kong Ming's like, my day is lying around and taking naps. Why would I want to go with you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Jen.
I was going to say, in chapter 36, last episode, there was that whole bit where Shan Fu came up to Kong Ming and is like, so I'm sending Xuanda over to collect you, more or less. And Kong Ming is incredibly frustrated with this, feels like he's being drafted into something he has no interest in. But through chapters 37 and 38, Xuanda puts in the effort to show that he sees Kong Ming as more than someone he can bring into his ranks and use as an asset. He treats him like someone who's valued, and that makes all the difference in the world, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, Kong Ming in many ways is like a more extreme version of what Xuanda's done. Like, Xuanda's someone who, when he turns something down, he means it. He's not just like putting on airs, trying to be humble. He yes. is willing to rest in whatever station fate has thrown in his way that he thinks is appropriate. And Kong Ming is like even more like, I'm going to reject any advancement because wisdom shows me it's much happier to be on this hillside than fighting a war. And I guess I'll fight the war, but I don't want to, because fighting a war is a great way to be miserable or dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So yeah, I just, great chapter. It was great on my first read, even better coming back to it. This book's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. We come to chapter 39. Jingzhou's heir pleads three times for advice. The director general makes his debut at Bowang. Gongning kills Huangzu, securing Sun Quan's victory. However, Sun Quan must fall back before Liu Biao counterattacks. Liu Biao goes to Xuanda for help with the attack, but Kong Ming advises Xuanda to avoid helping at all costs. Liu Biao offers Xuanda his realm, but Xuanda declines to Kong Ming's consternation. Eventually, Xuanda convinces Liu Biao that he will hold off Cao Cao while Liu Biao deals with Sun Quan. Liu Biao's son Liu Qi goes to Kong Ming for advice on how to deal with his stepmother's scheming, but Kong Ming refuses to interfere in family business. Liu Qi tricks him into a situation where he cannot avoid giving advice, and Kong Ming advises him to join the army to get away from his family. Xuanda backs this up by suggesting Liu Biao send his son with the army to the south. Cao Cao sends Cao Cao sends Xiao Hao Dun to attack Xuanda, and Kong Ming proposes a plan to foil the attack that baffles everyone around him. Regardless, they comply, and it turns out to be a plan to lure Xiao Hao Dun into a narrow road and then start a fire all around him.
Oh, the most basic plan in the history of plans.
The battle literally rages. Yes. And Xiao Hao Dun is decisively defeated despite a large number advantage. Cao Cao will be back, but Kong Ming has a plan for that too. What is the plan? Read on.
Yeah. The idea that Lord Guan and Zhang Fei just cannot grasp the idea of a simple ambush is like true to their character, because they're guys who are going to ride straight at you and try to cut your head off. But also, mm-hmm. they're just the biggest dummies in all of the land.
You make the ambush, you set the like ambush point, and then you set everyone on fire. It's like the most basic plan ever, and only Kong Ming has thought of it.
Yes.
He even, like, he doesn't, like, literally spell it out, but he gives them all the pieces. He's like, okay, you lure them here, and you lure them here, and then when there's a fire, you attack. And they're like, I don't know what he could be planning.
They're so unwilling to listen to him for a simple ambush that Xuanda has to give Kong Ming his seal and his sword to be like, okay, he's in charge now, you have to do what he says.
But like, he anticipates this, he asks for them in advance, and then when Zhang Fei's like, I don't know, he kind of like jingles it in front of him like keys and is like, see the seal, shut the fuck up.
It is like, in terms of like the strategies employed, this is probably the best plan that we've ever seen, because it's not just an ambush. It is a frontal attack that's meant to like goad them forward and think there's going to be an ambush. Then there's a fake ambush from behind with a smaller force that they can easily repel. And then they'll be like, well, we've defeated the ambush. Let's press on. And then they press on, like, you know, with energy into the second ambush, which is the one that sets everything on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's good at this.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, want to note that Sean Fu, after our previous chapters where he was like, "I'm never going to breathe a single word of strategy to Cao Cao," he's here. He's here giving Cao Cao advice on how good Kong Ming is a general and how much they need to worry about him. Like, what was all that back there?
I mean, it is established that he will cave. Like, that is what the first thing he does is go back and cave.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, his advice is just like, man, that guy rules.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's not like you know what he's going to do. It's just like, man, that guy is sick as hell. It's like, it's not super actionable, I feel like.
Yeah. Plan A, don't pursue. Plan 2, or Plan B, I've got something for you, but it's not going to work. I'll do my best.
I also love the bit where Xuande is explaining to Kong Ming why he couldn't take advantage of Liu Biao's frustration and put himself next in line to control the area. And Kong Ming's response is basically sighing and being like, oh, how honorable.
He's like, oh shit, he's nice. Damn it.
Yeah, I was curious. I feel like there is some subtlety in his reaction of just sighing, like, is it the, like, oh, he should have taken this as a good thing, I'm in the presence of someone who is too nice to say no? Or is it, like, resignation that he actually is, like, now sworn to someone who is honorable in the way that he values honor and people? I think you could read it that way, too. Like,
I feel like it's both,
yeah.
Right? I feel like there's a level of, like, I'm glad I'm in the service of someone honorable, but also this can be really inconvenient.
Yeah, inconvenient. And also, because it's someone that he's like actually believes in, he's going to be ride or die for this guy against his better sense that maybe you shouldn't get entangled in this war in the first place.
And I don't want to tip my hand into like too much stuff. But I do think like a lot of the interactions, even at this point with Kong Ming and Xuande, are like tipped by... there are two competing ideas of honor in this moment, right? There is like filial honor, must be loyal to my family, and also what it means to be loyal to the state. And Zhijie Liang is like full in on, this is what it takes to be loyal to the state. Sometimes you've got to betray your shithead like family member because it is for the greater good of stability. And Xuande just can't. He just like is incapable of seeing that. In at least in this moment. And then we like, you know, so I think that like when this book starts introducing that tension between these two characters is when it like really starts to get really good.
I don't think he is incapable of seeing it. He would just never choose that.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we'll see where that goes. Like, I think it's like, you know, it wants you to think both of these characters are putting forward things that are like honorable in their own ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are meant to look at these two and think of them as like paragons of their own, you know, they are the they're both like at the top of their own food chain for what they represent.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so this chapter is really good. I'm so glad Kong Ming's here.
Xuande didn't get himself trapped in an attic giving basic advice to people.
Fucking true.
I mean, I will say, if you get trapped in an attic, like, his advice like does the job, but his advice is just like, join the army, see the world, let me out.
kick this can down the road another 10 years. You don't have to worry about it.
I love him falling for, oh, I have an ancient scroll I think you'd like to read up in my attic, after he's been followed incessantly by Liu Qi, constantly being asked, so about my murderous stepmother.
I have certain passions too, where if, you know, if I was following someone around and they just keep being like, no, 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 and then they were like, wait, actually, I've got some great, you know, like, I don't know, fucking Dragon Ball Z DVDs in my attic, I would like, oh shit, let's go check those out.
I would also fall for this. If you're like, oh, I have a translation of a Gundam thing that isn't online anymore, I'll be like, yeah, sure, I'll follow you wherever. We're straight to hell.
Ready to risk it all.
Here we go.
I have the despecialized versions of the Star Wars trilogy.
I've already got them, so it's fine.
Yeah, I don't want them. Special. Listen, they're special for a reason. They're special in my heart.
That's just wrong. But you live your life.
I know. I'm just being a dickhead. I don't have feelings. Well,
imagine thinking.
couldn't be me.
Couldn't be me.
I do, like, it's one of those things where the book does this a lot, but I do really like the timing of when Jahadun gets ambushed. His advisors are like, wait, we should retreat. There could be a fire. And there's immediately a fire.
Well, he's like, ignored them, like, three times, and he's just at the point where he's like, right, we are walking directly into the biggest trap possible. But it's far too late.
Yep.
People should listen to their advisors. Like, if you just pick an advisor and listen to them, everyone's problems would have been solved years ago at this point.
You're telling me indecision is the worst decision of all?
Yes, I am.
Elon Shao's like, fuck! He has so many troops, he could have picked any strategy and it would have been fine.
I do also, like, we've gotten multiple scenes of, like, people, like, confronting their former vassals, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we got Gan Ning with Huang Xu here, and we get the, like, why did you betray me? And they have a moment of, like, uncertainty or whatever, but here Huang Xu's like, why did you betray me? I was so good to you. And Gan Ning is like, you were a huge piece of shit! Die!
Big same.
So I love that. That's part of why I think Gan Ning might be great. Is he doesn't waffle. He's like, no, I know what I want. Fuck this.
Yeah, it's nice to have the sensation that there's a bit more at stake than just go fight Cao Cao, because now there's multiple sides all trying to take over Liu Biao's territory, because everyone at this point knows that Liu Biao is a weakling and will be killed sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I think that's it. I have.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited for. I really like. Shan Fu was all right, but it was like, okay, sure. And then I was like, okay, so now we're gonna get another advisor, and he'll be good, and like whatever. But like, I really am enjoying the dynamic that Kong Ling is bringing to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
So excited for the future, but let's read the great work of Master Mi Heng, shall we?
It better be good. This guy better produce the best work possible, or he might be in trouble.
Oh, by the way, worth noting, Huang Zhu, the guy that Gan Ning killed, is the guy who killed Mi Heng. So.
Great.
Rhapsody on a Parrot. Huang Zhu's heir Yi once gave a big party. Someone had presented a parrot to him, so he raised his cup to Mi Heng and said, Master Mi, I am at a loss today to entertain our guests, but here is this bird from far away, wise and intelligent, precious among the feathered breed. Wouldn't you write a rhapsody on it for all the guests to enjoy? Heng therefore wrote out the rhapsody without a pause and without a change. The text is as follows. This marvelous bird from the western region, endowed by nature with unusual beauty, embodies the fine substance of the metal essence, possesses the bright flames of the fire element, intelligent and capable of speech, clever and gifted with foreknowledge. Therefore it sports in high places, perches in remote regions, in flights reluctant to flock at random, on the wing careful in choosing its grove, purple feet, cinnabar beak, green jacket, kingfish collar, elegant-looking, many-colored, fine-sounding, caw-caw, akin to feathered creatures, yet unusual in intelligence and singular of mind, beautiful as the phoenix, not to be compared with ordinary birds. Thus the emperor, attracted by its far-reaching reputation, admiring the beauty of its form, sends his forester to the Lung Mountains, dispatches Po Yu to the moving sands, deploys archers across the Kunlun, this is longer than I thought, spreads his nets above the clouds and rainbows. Nets are made of many cords, but it ends up caught in a single mesh. Now, the parrot is tranquil in manner. It stays on its perch, remains at ease, unafraid of man's approach, unalarmed at his touch, preferring to avoid harm by submission rather than get itself killed for resistance. Thus men are rewarded for presenting them unharmed, but punished for injuring them. Then, reduced to extremes, living on sufferance, parted from the flock, deprived of companions, shut up in a carved cage, shorn of wing feathers, carried away 10,000 li, over rough terrain with many obstacles, crossing mountain Min, passing the Chang, suffering in turn from heat and cold. How fucking long is this? Oh my god. so much. There's a fair bit more. We are more than halfway, but... a bride leaving home to go to her husband, a subject going out to serve his lord. Even great men encountering troubles have been forced to rest in their exile. Much more a trifling thing like a bird, it cannot but grow tame and resign itself. And though it constantly longs for the road west and lingers gazing towards its home, at least with the stench of its worthless flesh, it is safe from the cauldron and chopping block. Alas, that its fate should be so hard. Why must it live in such difficult times? Is it because speech leads to disaster, or telling secrets puts one in danger? How sad that the mother and child should be separated forever, that the husband and wife should be parted in life. Not that it begrudges its remaining years, but it pities its helpless fledglings. It has forsaken a lowly barbarian state to serve a distinguished gentleman. Afraid of not living up to reputation, ashamed to have no unusual talent, admiring the rich lands of the western capital, but admitting that its own tastes far differ. It longs for a far-off Tai or Yue, I'm probably saying that wrong. Whenever it speaks, it talks of that. Then in autumn, when Xiao Hao governs the season, and Zhu Shou speeds the chariot, stern frost just approaching, cold wind whistling, it sings long songs of its distant desires. Sorrowful cries stirring kindred responses. Voice sad and plaintive, form mournful and wasted. Those hearing it grieve, those seeing it weep. Repeated sighs from banished ministers, sobs from rejected wives. It longs for the friends of a lifetime, as dear to it as brother to brother. Why should they be cut off today, like Q and Yue a world apart? It bobs up and down within a cage, and paces back and forth, peering through door and window, dreaming of the high peaks of Kunlun, longing for the dense verdure, that's a new word to me, of the forest Tang. But then it thinks of its mutilated wings. Flap as it may, where will they take it? Heart longing to return, but unable. It can only grow bitter far from here. If one serves his master with all his heart, how can he be ungrateful and forget past kindness? It has put its useless life in your hands, entrusted its worthless person to you, aiming to repay you with its life, hoping to express its honest opinions. It has relied on your great favor in the past. May that long continue unchanged.
I think something got lost in translation there.
Maybe a little.
Where's that from?
It's an online library. This is a translation by someone from Harvard.
I just want to go ahead and point out how good the translation of the poems are in the book, because they have definitely opted to like make slightly more substantive changes to make them read like it's a very basic rhyming couplet style usually for the poems in the book. But I think that's much better than just taking the meanings of this bird is really nice, here's its Wikipedia page, without the like construction of language that clearly gives that poem its like beauty in the original, like, because then like that's an interesting academic text to find out what the fuck he said about that bird, but that's not a good poem in English.
Yeah.
Well, but also, to be fair, I mean, like, at first he's like, oh, here's the Wikipedia page, and then he's like, but can't we all relate with the bird? Because all of us have been fucked over by somebody, goddamn.
Yeah, no, it's like a good, it's a good, like, expression of the ideals of, like, this kind of service and, like, what Mihang believed in and everything. Just, it's making me really appreciate the choices made for the poetry in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure. It's one of those things that, like, reading, you know, I've read, like, a couple of translations of, like, Dante's Inferno. I didn't bother with most of the rest of the Divine Comedy because I thought it was boring, to be honest. And it's really interesting seeing people try to translate, you know, poetry from other language. It just seems so hard.
I think this is ungenerous to this poem. I think this poem's all right. Also, you should read all the Divine Comedy. Don't get me started, because we'll be here for 3 hours. You're talking to a former medievalist.
So I can safely discount your opinion.
No. My opinion is correct. What you want is Purgatorio. That's the best one. Anyway, I think this poem's all right. Like, dealing in poems and translation is always a fraught situation. But in terms of, like, Meehan's out here with his anti-globalist agenda, it's good.
There is the part where he's like, wow, his has a sad life, but at least it smells so fucking bad, no one's gonna cook it.
I was definitely taken by surprise when it went into a lot of detail about how beautiful this bird is, and then it went and then started going to this worthless bird and its useless flesh.
Shame, really.
Since it came up, because the bird is of metal, does anyone know their Chinese element alignment? I will give you the way to do this. Here you go. It's in the chat.
No, this would be very helpful. Let's have a look at what we're looking
at. I am wood.
If your birth year... I assume that just means 1990, you know.
Yeah, whatever number it ends in.
Yes, yeah, so okay. I am three. I am water.
I am earth.
And I am metal.
And here's some quick ones. Wood is exceptionally gifted. Idealists, planners, the owl.
I am water, sympathetic, perfectionist, coordinator, chameleon.
Yeah.
You know what? Those for us two, those are pretty spot on.
Yeah, I agree.
At first, I read the metal one for myself, and I was like, literally none of these apply to me. But no, I am earth, so kindness, tolerant, honest, leader, peacock. I'll agree with peacock.
Yeah, I am apparently determined, persistent, workaholic, manager, tiger. I don't think manager even comes close to what I am, but okay.
I would say the other three are accurate.
Yeah, probably.
I think everyone on here is workaholic.
Well, that's just what it's like to live under late capitalism. Like, are we workaholics by nature or environment?
I did have a moment where, so I told you the part of this that was the original bad plan, right? Where I was like, I'm going to create a separate podcast where I do the full ass summaries. And you're like, that's fucking stupid.
Yes.
And then I had a moment of like, maybe I should just do an audiobook of Three Kingdoms. I'm like, that's even stupider. Also probably illegal.
Yeah, I'd probably break a copyright law or something.
Hang on, Three Kingdoms is not under copyright. I guess the translation
is.
No, but this translation
fall under copyright.
I had a moment there.
If six wants to read it in Chinese, then we're fine.
I guess you would have to read the Bruett Taylor translation.
Yes.
Because that one is public domain.
Yes.
Or I could just not charge money for it and hope no one gets mad at me.
the way all podcasts operate.
I think this podcast is better. We talked more in conversation.
I agree.
The plot was still able to be followed. No one missed anything. You can still follow the plot and the basics, and the specifics we'll drill into are the ones we care about. So
this was exactly what I was hoping. So
if this is unsatisfying and you did want more summary, I would suggest reading the book.
Read on, as we say at the end of this.
Please read this book.
Yeah. Please read this book.
You can read other books later, but you should read this one first.
Yes. Yeah.
Co-signed.
All right, we should do Plug Zone.
Yeah.
I'll go first, I guess. Me and Jackson are at Abnormal Mapping. You can find that at abnormalmapping.com. This week we have just a ton of podcasts.
Jesus.
We're recording this on Sunday. My and my friend Autumn's episode on Porco Rosso came out on In an Airplane, which is a Studio Ghibli podcast. Monday and Tuesday we have podcasts about the anime's Flag and Macross Plus. Wednesday's Gundam. Fridays are End of the Year Abnormal Mapping. We have a ton of shows. If you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/abnormalmapping. You should do that because Jackson's government is trying to kill them by taking away all their support.
People have supported us recently, and they've been very, very kind. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you can find me at @EM_being on Twitter. Jackson's at @headfallsoff. That's Abnormal Mapping.
Yep.
I'm at JBU3 on Twitter. Most of my stuff is on scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. Though I also have a visual novel podcast, Novel Not New, a True End podcast with Six. And we're still looking for another co-host, but the search process is coming along, and that's at readinggames.online.
And we should have an interim episode coming up. I think early January is probably what we're going to do.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
We're doing a little mini app just to get something on the feed. And, you know, like, hey, visual novels don't stop just because we're having staffing problems.
I'm the staffing problem.
Listen, the staffing problem is that all of us are overcommitted and stupidly ambitious sometimes. And sometimes you're like, wait, I have enough projects. What if I worked on those?
Yeah. Yep. I'm literally under doctor's orders to not take on more work. So
it's true. We are maxed up.
And speaking of which, there will be a podcast on Scanline Media every weekday this week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Hell yeah.
Everyone comes back to work after Christmas with just tons of podcasts.
Yeah. See, this is the great thing about not... My Christmas is just going to be like me at home, like, making orange chicken and then just editing podcasts all day.
I am also going to get Chinese food on Christmas because that's what we do in this household.
I'm having roast lamb.
Oh, that's the most British possible Christmas.
Do you all know that turkey is Christmas for the UK rather than for Thanksgiving? Because we don't have that.
I assume it'd be goose, because goose is the traditional Christmas bird. But
it's for some reason, like, turkey has been, and it must have gone a while, because, like, to my grandma, turkey is, like, the Christmas food. But knowing it's a Thanksgiving food in America, is like, I wonder how old that tradition is. Probably, like, 50 years at most.
Yeah. I mean, the Christmas Carol, he asked for a Christmas goose. I've had Christmas goose. Goose is good. I prefer it to turkey, but it's harder to get a hold of.
Nope. If you don't prefer goose to turkey, you are crazy.
Turkey's the worst of the meats.
It's a bad bird.
I enjoy a turkey sandwich more than basically anything in the world. But outside of that, yeah, you're right.
if it's just like a roast dinner with your potatoes and, you know, that kind of thing, it's bad.
Just get a chicken. Just get a chicken.
Well, I guess this
or a duck. If you're fancy, get a duck.
Yeah, duck is very so similar good. To goose, much greasier, much tastier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Read on.
Yeah, okay, we're done. I'm shutting this down.
Yes.
Who you know.